It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Well, it's about a minute and a half past the hour, and we begin a brand new live broadcast here at the Horn. One of these days, headonradionetwork.com will be our home again as soon as I can get the domain name issue sorted out. I've been trying for 2 days now. Anyway, headonradionetwork.com and headon.live are our homes on the interweb tubes. And that's where you can go to pick up the stream, either from headon.live or from whiterosesociety.org. They're both working this evening, which means it's a marvelous opportunity for me to remind you that if on some particular day the tune-in, Horn tune-in stream isn't working, that's because it's attached to the White Rose stream, which has been a bit sketchy lately. And if you can't get it, don't assume that Bob's gone on some fabulous, you know, globe-trotting vacation, because Bob doesn't do that, and Bob's talking about himself in the third person right now, and that's usually a bad sign, too. No, it means that the White Rose stream is down, and that means that you need to go over to headon.live, headon.live, where the HTML5 player will take off and run like a skirt jackrabbit. It really, really will. Hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday here at the Horn, the 18th of January, 2018. And you know, it's funny, there are other 31-day months, July being one of them. And July just rips by. It's there, it's for you, boom, 4th of July, gone, and you're in August. January crawleth. But So it's the 18th, and we find ourselves, you know, this is a listener-supported program, and we found ourselves earlier, well, at the end of the night last night, in a $430 fundraising hole, but thanks very kindly to John, who says, hey, it's only fiat money, but it still helps. That was the subject line. Worthless fiat, but it still helps. And John knocked out an entire day's worth of programming funding to make sure that this evening all we have to deal with is $230. And that is huge. That's humongous. That's tremendous. Thank you so very, very kindly, John, for doing that. Not dealing with $400 and $600 fundraising holes takes a gigantic strain off my mind, you know, especially on days like this when I have to go and have a radical cachectomy at the doctor's office in order to be told that my A1C is great, but my triglycerides suck. Took about 5 minutes and, well north of $100 to find that out. So, you know, that's the good news and the bad news, and looks like I'm getting back on a statin drug, damn it. But, well, we agreed it's probably all for the best, so. And then, you know, we'll eventually get around to warm weather when I can get back out and get into the swing of things and it'll be weed eater season again, and I can raise holy hell with the weed eater out on the mansion back 40. Yeah. So, me and Geezer Disgustus apparently are about the same size. This is not inspiring. Of course, I've got a couple of bad habits that he doesn't have. He's got a couple of bad habits I don't have. Like the fact that he doesn't practice safe sex. Being monogamous is a big help in practicing safe sex, I gotta say that. But it turns out that Geezer Disgustus went a rutting on Stormy Daniels, according to her, without a condom. She's a risk taker. But maybe we'll get to that later in the program. But anyway, thank you. Thank you very kindly, John. Randy in PA says, "What's the matter, Bob? Snow shoveling, not enough exercise?" You know, I'm just not one of those guys that goes out and shovels the front yard. There's not a whole lot of snow shoveling to do around here. There hasn't been that much snow. Just brutal blue ass stay in the house cold. Although I am considering working on getting, and if we were doing video, you'd see the hand gestures now, working on getting into Tai Chi. Yes. And eventually, you know, eventually I will. It's I don't know. It's either that or Lithuanian folk dancing. You know, who can tell? Meanwhile, Clarity tells me I take flush free. Clarity says I take flush free niacin three times a day. My HDL is 145. I tried it, but flush-free niacin still flushed on me. Go figure. I'm just weird that way. But anyway, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. The fundraising goal has been cut down to a manageable $230 for this evening. One at 2:30, two at 1:15, 23 at 10, 10 at 23, four at 57:50. Oh, Jesus. Eight at 20... Oh, God. 24, no, 27 and a quarter. Who knows? Who knows? You know, me, math, ciphering, bad, Bob, ick. And if you want to help keep the program on the air, which is what we have to do on a month-to-month-to-month basis, then while Head On Radio Network is still down, and it's still down, and I'm sorry, go to headon.live, where there is a PayPal interface very similar to the one at headonradionetwork.com, and use that. Or you can always sign up for a subscription at patreon.com, and that won't come out until the 1st of February, first of the month, every month. And we're still looking to cross the one show funded per month line at patreon.com for those people who absolutely hate, loathe, detest, and otherwise despise PayPal. Okay? So there's that. Now, meanwhile, if we had the larcenous spirit of the right wing or the religion industry, these would be real, live, honest-to-goodness nutritional supplements, but unfortunately we don't and they aren't. But nonetheless, it falls to me at this point in time to direct your attention to the latest release from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. And with that in mind, I wanted to take a moment. You know, the hardworking, peripatetic, periodontic, periodical scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, they listen to the program too, and they pay attention to the conversations that go on. And so I think it was this past Friday on the front porch when our buddy Terry in Saigon mentioned the idea of dragon fruit, and this got the pink little ears of the hardworking peripatetic periodontic Perry Mason scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs Twitter. They got their creative juices flowing, so I'm proud to tell you this evening about a brand new antioxidant superfood. That's right, drafty dragon fruit from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs. All the goodness of dragon fruit packed into an itsy-bitsy tiny little capsule that costs next to nothing because it's worth next to nothing. That's right. Drafty dragon fruit from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. You know, I've never cared much for dragon fruit, but thanks to drafty dragon fruit from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, by golly, I can tell you that I'm getting an antioxidant burst here in the hard and brutal realities of a frozen Appalachian hellscape January that once I swallow my capsules every morning, I feel downright peppy and, dare I say it, even tropical. Drafty dragon fruit, and yes, there are side effects, hence the drafty part. Drafty dragon fruit from Horn Nutraceuticals. It's a proprietary blend of only the most carefully selected dragon fruit from Asia, and of course it is always, as with all Horn Nutraceutical products, GMO-free and vegan and vegetarian and gluten-free and cage-free and free-range and cruelty-free. No dragon fruits, well, except for the slashing and the smashing and the peeling and the stomping, were harmed in the making of drafty dragon fruit from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Except no substitutes. Operators aren't standing by. And remember, if you'll order a 3-month supply of drafty dragon fruit, well, just in case you doubt what we say here at Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter, by Jove, we will, with your 90-day supply, send along a little bundle of meaningless bullshit test strips so that you can find out at home what we already know here, that drafty dragon fruit from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter is a bullshit nutritional supplement just like all the other bullshit nutritional supplements that are hustled all over the radio broadcasting world, because, of course, you can't be a professional broadcasting operation unless you've got a bullshit nutritional supplement to hustle to the credulous rubes. And, of course, I'm not talking about the Horn Family Community Congregation. I'm talking about the occasional right-wing lurker who pops by. Right? Right. So, accept no substitutes. Cough up right now. Let's see. Cough up $124.71 because, well, there's a lot of transportation costs involved with drafty dragon fruit. That covers it all. And we will send you those test strips. And sitting there in the comfort and privacy of your own home, you can say, son of a bitch, he wasn't kidding. This thing is absolutely worthless. And then you can wait for the next product to come along from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Drafty dragon fruit, accept no substitutes, post no bills, use no hooks, this side up. FOBCODFRUIT from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Yes. Yeah, meanwhile, Clarity pointing out, get all Grateful Dead drifty on drafty dragon fruit with a toot or two. Bob Weir gets weird on it. Well, I didn't know there were already celebrity endorsements. Son of a gun, I hope we don't have to pay him. That's right, drafty dragon fruit, only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Follow at Horn Labs on Twitter now, so you can keep up with all the magnificent bullshit nutritional offerings from Horn Nutraceuticals. Yes, a note coming in from our good friend Michael in Madison. Drafty dragon fruit. Sorry, I tuned in late. Drafty dragon fruit, you say. Has Horn Nutraceuticals opened up a Saigon branch? And are any imaginary jobs available? All our jobs at Horn Nutraceuticals, including mine, are in fact imaginary, so I would say so. Thanks for your inquiry. We'll keep your resume on file. Meanwhile, for reasons that I don't fully understand, Scott and Punky want to know, does Drafty Dragon Fruit come in suppository form? Asking for a friend. I'd take a look at my friends list if I were you, Scott. That's my only advice. And a question coming, and I guess it's kind of a serious one. A question coming from our old friend Jim. Where did you get the idea for these nostrums? Well, if you go back several months, you will find a discussion of super beets. And the way that those things are hustled on a particular radio program, not to mention the chocolate chicken bone paleo shake nasty thing that Alex Jones hustles alongside with a bunch of other nutraceuticals. And that's where the idea came from, just because obviously these are highly professional radio broadcasts and they've got bullshit nutritional supplements, so I figured it'd be a good thing if the Horn had some bullshit nutritional supplements to hustle as well. See how it works? Because capitalism, right? Earther wants to know, can Gaffy Galloon Boot, Gaffy Gallon Boot help Asa and I make better jokes about one's penis? You'll never know until you try it. And I'm not even talking about the suppository form there, Earther. So I'll leave that entirely up to you. But yes, there's a low-grade jingle for you just to get the program started. Now, it is, of course, the 18th day of January, 2018, and we've got 12 years. Yeah, just a minute. We've got 12 years of archives here, and that was part of what inspired a Horn archivist and historian, Asa, to create a little something we like to call This Day in Horn History. Yes. And for today's edition of This Day in Horn History, we're dialing the Vox holographic time machine back 8 years, all the way to January 18th, 2010. And the flux capacitor must be working in rare form. It's Moran Monday, and Bob opens a show that turns into a rock-solid 3 hours of conversation with no pee-pee breaks or musical interludes. First Moran nomination goes to Tim Tebow, the premise being that Tim Tebow stars in an anti-choice TV commercial that's set to run during the Super Bowl, put together by none other than the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mazzupistan. Bob makes the case that maybe these good Christians could perhaps put all the money and effort they put into an anti-choice Super Bowl ad towards helping the recently ravaged, earthquake-stricken people of, Haiti. Longtime friend of the show, Edward from Dallas, calls in for the very first time that evening. Bob then has a spirited conversation with Dwayne Hunn from World Service Corps. Dwayne makes the case that in tragedies like the recent Haiti earthquake, retraining American forces who are otherwise trained to kill to be a building and rescue force could generate a lot of goodwill for the United States. Later on, in conversation with Matt, Bob calls for-profit corporations soulless sociopathic machines. A mere 2 years into the future, a certain nominee running for president, who happens to be a bishop, without saying Willard Romney or anything, would vehemently disagree with Bob's notion because corporations are people, my friend. Human beings, my friend. And the trees are just the right height in Detroit. It's the night of a special election in Massachusetts to pick the replacement for Ted Kennedy. Martha Coakley is running on the Democratic ticket against a then little-known Republican, Scott Brown. Bob, in conversation with Kevin, speculates that the Democrat, Coakley, has all but blown her 30-point lead over Scott Brown, a man who accused the sitting president of the United States, Barack Obama, of being a bastard child and chanted, "We ought to shove a curling iron up my opponent's ass." Yes, Scott Brown also being a former Playgirl centerfold, as a matter of fact, as well, during one of his campaign events. Long story short, the Democrat did blow up her 30-point lead, and the curling iron up the butt Republican won Ted Kennedy's Senate seat for a term. That seat would later be taken back by Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren in 2013. And that's a look back 2,922 days into the past for This Day in Horn History. Yep. Yep, that so it was. So it was indeed. And a scant 8 years ago. Marty wants to know, not using Mr. Peabody's Wayback Machine? Well, sometimes. Sometimes the Wayback Machine breaks down. Yes. And consequently, the Vox holographic device. Mm-hmm. 21 minutes past the hour as we begin the serious part of this this Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we are up to our gazoots in thorns. Lots and lots of thorns, definitely thorns. Interesting stuff this evening, fascinating stuff. But before we do that, just a little something to draw a distinction, say, between this program and others. Mm-hmm. You know, we joke here about the Maybach in the garage and the hangar with the Gulfstream 5 in it. It is, of course, a joke. There is no Gulfstream 5 here. But nonetheless, there are people out there who get Gulfstream 5s. Take, for instance, televangelist Kenneth Copeland. Old Ken got himself a brand new Gulfstream 5 last Friday that he, of course, will use to spread the prosperity gospel of Jesus Christ. How much does one of those things cost? And then they put up a video bragging about their new jet. Wonder how many homeless you could house, how many naked you could clothe, how many people in prison you could visit, how many sick you could heal, how many hungry you could feed with the cost of a Gulfstream 5. Well, it doesn't matter a hill of beans to Kenneth Copeland, because, well, igum foo, suckers.
This is Friday, January the 12th, 2018. We took possession of the Gulfstream 5, and we give God praise for it and thanksgiving. It is debt-free.
Now, one of the best parts about this is and we're talking about video here, so I realize it's a challenge for radio, but the video image of cranky old Kenneth Copeland and his team there standing around in what are probably $1,000, $2,000 each leather mil-spec bomber jackets with shearling fur collars, as if they were getting ready to, you know, do, you know, a night bombing raid on Berlin or something. But you can't make this stuff up. We are debt-free.
This is a big deal, man. It's a big airplane.
Hey, are you looking at this? Hey, are you seeing this? I hope so. You bought it.
You look at it. You bought it. You ain't never going to get anywhere near it, some motherfucker. It's mine, baby. It is mine. All mine. And it's old tax-free. Hallelujah.
You and Jesus.
Long, loving shots of the Gulfstream 5, slow pans, all accompanied by the cackling. The cackling of Kenneth Copeland, whose daughter, by the way, it's worth remembering, started a communicable disease outbreak because, of course, she's an anti-vaxxer. Mm-hmm. Earther just, what? God paid for it? Well, that's what you say for the tax filing purposes, Earther. Yeah, you're right, yes. Meanwhile, a suggestion coming from Robert in Australia. Hey, Bob, how about selling bottled air? Genuine bottled air from West by God, Virginia. Watch as our bottling experts unscrew the lid of this empty plastic bottle before filling it with genuine West Virginia air. West Virginia air, it's just like raw water, only you breathe it. $35 a bottle plus $9.95 shipping, handling, and packaging. And being as in America, we ain't got no GST, so look at the money you save. Oh, that's an idea, Robert. That is an idea. And you know, for an extra $15, we'll make sure that you get you some of them guaranteed West by God ultra fine particulates for your bottled air there, so you can breathe just like a hillbilly. Mm-hmm. Subject line, Bishop Mitt coming in from Scott and Punky. I hope Willard Mitt Romney does run for Orrin Hatch's Utah Senate seat in November. Well, your hopes are going to be, your prayers will be answered in the affirmative. Scott and Punky note, it would make for a lovely slogan for his opponent. Let's all pull together and whip the bishop. How about, or beat the bishop? That's a little bit more alliterative, isn't it? Yes, as a matter of fact, what a memory you have, Brother Deacon Asa. Asa asking, was it Kenneth Copeland who was having a back-and-forth conversation with God a couple of years ago about whether he really liked his older jet? I forget. No, you didn't. That's exactly who. Ken's been fixated on this Gulfstream 5 for a while now. Damn, that's a pretty jet. I bet you... Hoo-wee! I bet you could get you an entire phalanx of Russian hookers in one of them things. And Donald Trump. And the music. Oh, the
Father,
music.
Father, we thank you, sir. And I'm asking you now, sir, according to you.
Wait, he calls God, sir? God's an officer? You know, not a sergeant. Not sergeant. No, that's, when something's so old, it's so old that since Christ was a corporal in the army of God. But no, God's a sir, and it's time to thank God for that Gulfstream jet that God didn't have anything to do with him getting, but the tax code and the simplicity of folks who are, knocking out one or two meals a day so that Kenneth can have his Gulfstream 5 jet. Yeah.
Father, we thank you, sir, and I'm asking you now, sir, according to your word, bless our partners beyond measure. Yes, in the name of Jesus. For you said in 2002, I'm sending you new partners who are very strong financially and they will obey me. And I will increase your longtime partners, and they will obey me. And you will not come short. And
no, that's what Donald Trump does when he's with Stormy Daniels. Come short, never mind.
You will not fail, and you will not lack, and you will not come behind.
Well, okay, and coming behind, that's probably what he did with the other hooker. And, he comes short with everybody, but never mind.
And you will not be diminished. Praise God. Isn't that good? It's coming to pass.
It's coming to pass.
You know what? Jesus is Lord.
Then shalt thou delight thyself unto the Lord, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth. Isaiah 58:14 is the Bible verse in question there. Yeah. Imaginary, you say, says Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob, it's funny you mentioned that the jobs and supplements at the Horn are imaginary. On last night's episode of Happy on Sci-Fi, the hero, while speaking to his daughter's imaginary friend that he can see, tells him that he needs to get his imaginary shit together. I will suggest the same for the Horn. Signed, Ron in Raleigh. You know, there's a lot of money to be made to be had in the imaginary world. I mean, I'm pretty much guessing Kenneth Copeland didn't buy that with no fucking Bitcoin, right? Meanwhile, note coming in from Matt in San Francisco, that plane, I heard Jesus was known for his good taste in jets. I think he preferred his with fine Corinthian leather seats. Yes, of course, of course. I mean, we can't have any old, plain old boring bullshit leather seats. No siree, not for Jesus. Do you think they keep a seat empty for Jesus? Because I'm guessing most of the time, Ken probably has a hooker in his seat. Or something like that. Maybe the bartender. Right. I just thought that'd be fun to start with. Robert pointing out, the Gulfstream 5, the most inefficient, polluting way to travel. Happy to see God supports killing the planet. Well, you can't have Kenneth Copeland riding in coach now, can you? What would that say about his Lord and Savior? Jesus is about the leg room, okay? Meanwhile, Scott and Punky note, when it comes to his hucksterism, Kenneth Copeland learned from the best. In the late 60s, he attended Oral Roberts University in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and later became his chauffeur and, come on, that's right, pilot. Hence the bomber jacket. So, as we begin this evening, in a desperate attempt to raise $230, just this is what you get when you work this side of the street. Because I can't sit here and tell you that anybody's going to bless you, if let you into heaven or keep you out of hell, if you contribute to keep the horn on the air. All I can tell you is that the horn will stay on the air. And that, in fact, you'll get to be, I hope, to a certain extent entertained and to a much larger extent informed along the way as a result. But no, there's no special spiritual gifts that come with, signing up for a subscription or anything like that. It's just a matter of, it's just a matter of getting to engage in conversation and having this program right here, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So, daggummit, oh well. There we go. It was the cackling part that really made me decide to run that. Hey, I got a Gulfstream 5, son of a bitch, you people are stupid. We're gonna be busy with thorns in the side this evening. Lots and lots of thorns in the side, and it's always an adventure to see just where we're gonna start, but. Since it's not necessarily, it's not getting the rich and varied coverage that it deserves, I mentioned it during the opening of the program, let's take a couple of minutes to talk about the ongoing saga of Stormy. Oh, Stormy. Okay, no more singing tonight. If I had Guy James around, I bet he could do Stormy just awesome. As I mentioned, in her In Touch interview, Stormy said that, and it's from the same one, it's from the same interview where she talks about walking out of the bathroom only to find Trump laying on the bed beckoning to her. She didn't say how he beckoned, but I don't even want to think about how he beckoned. She thought, oh, here we go. And then went on to say that, no, he did not use a condom at that time or any other time that he was, that he and she were philandering on melanoma, who had recently given birth to little Boron. Nope. Never. No condoms. Well, for one, they probably don't make them small enough. I mean, maybe he could have used one of those finger cots that you use, like when you've got a burn or a blister on your finger or something. Maybe, I don't know. I don't even like to speculate because I still have ambitions of having some reheated second day spaghetti after the program this evening. God, it's so good the next day. It's so much better the next day. One of these days I'll share the spaghetti sauce recipe. There's really not much to it. But damn, it's good. It's a matter of what goes in it. But anyway, he doesn't, and there's no reason to think, if you think about human behavior, and I'm being quite serious here, if he decided not to use a condom with Stormy Daniels, a porn star and sex worker, okay, and again, I'm not trying to denigrate, it is not my intent to denigrate that line of that profession, said to be the oldest one in the world. That's not my intent at all. But if he would mount up, oh, Jesus, there's no way to talk about this without needing the brain drain-o. There's just not. I'm sorry. If he would mount up on her without any without a condom, then there is reason to think, don't you believe, that that's probably his MO. I mean, if you were rapping the rascal, as the saying goes, or if he was, not you, him, if he was rapping the rascal, as the saying goes, back in the 90s, he would have had no cause to tell or to say to Howard Stern that the 90s were his sexual Vietnam. I mean, if given, you know, because it's the reference there is that he was putting himself in some sort of peril by having a lot of sex in the 1990s. Well, peril is significantly reduced if you use a condom. We know this. It took a lot of people dying to get us in the United States to start encouraging safe sex practices. And to a large extent, in a lot of states, you still can't teach safe sex to kids in high school, who apparently, at least, have narrow enough attention spans that they've moved on from sex and now they're taking the Tide Pod Challenge. And oh, Jesus, this country. Anyway, if you're using a condom and you're calling the 90s your sexual Vietnam, that's kind of like saying that you were in Vietnam when you were, to paraphrase or misapply the alleged words of George S. Patton, shoveling shit in Louisiana. Yeah. You see the comparison? What Donald Trump was saying in those interviews with Howard Stern was that he'd been having a lot of unprotected sex. And for instance, there's things like, and I would never have thought of this except for the fact that I was watching a brilliant stand-up special. Eliza Schlesinger is one of my favorite comedians. I recently found out about her just because I'm not that plugged into the culture anymore. But I found out about her when some guy went to a women-only show of hers. It was billed as women-only somewhere in California. And the guy was eventually turned away because it was a women-only show. So, of course, what did he do? He went and filed suit because he had been discriminated against by virtue of the fact that it was a women-only show. So I thought, okay, who is this person? And I started watching clips, and I couldn't stop laughing. And so I was watching, Agnes and I were watching it. I think we've watched all of her specials now because they are, God, she's brilliant. She's hilarious. But we were watching one called Confirmed Kills. And in it, she mentions the human papillomavirus, HPV. And she mentions that guys can carry it around and not have any outward symptoms, no manifestations whatsoever, but it manifests itself symptomatically in women. And the human papillomavirus is all over the American population and probably the world population. See what I mean? What do you think the odds are that after his sexual Vietnam, Donald Trump is probably carrying around the human papillomavirus? But more importantly, since it was sexual Vietnam, isn't that a confession that he was doing some pretty skanky stuff? If you know what I mean, in the ways of unprotected sex and who he was having it with. And I'm sorry, but I don't think syphilis is, or any manifestation of it is going to show up on a CBC. It's something you have to look for to find. And if it had gone tertiary, it might not have had any impact on melanoma or you know, the little boy. And the sexual Vietnam is after, like, Eric and Donald Jr. and Ivanka and Tiffany, more or less. And I'm sorry, the tertiary neurosyphilis theory is still quite viable. Will we ever know? It probably only after the fact, and probably only under the rarest of circumstances then. And I'm not one to judge people's sex lives. It ain't the sex, it's the hypocrisy. And yes, we've got a government shutdown looming tomorrow, about which Geezer Disgustus seems to think that he can go on Twitter and blame the Democrats and have it all be okay, because, you know, there's a whole lot of people that love him in Merca.
The greatest country in the history of the world on Earth, now today in the universe forever under God.
Then there actually are, because, as previously noted, a whole bunch of his Twitter followers are bought. And apparently the same sort of thinking is occurring with Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana, who says, let me get this straight, Bob. Stain on a blue dress, impeachment. Born in Hawaii, Kenyan-born Muslim. Deleted emails, lock her up. Unprotected adultery with a porn star while your wife is home with your new baby. Moral behavior from a godly man sent and anointed by God to make America great again. Got it. And then there's the money, the payoff involved, the $130,000. Just gets weirder and weirder and weirder. Michael Cohen, Trump's lawyer, according to corporate records that have been unearthed and reported by the Wall Street Journal, Michael Cohen created a Delaware limited liability corporation called Essential Consultants LLC back on October the 17th, 2016. And apparently he used it primarily as the vehicle by which he would send the $130,000 payment to the client trust account of a lawyer who was representing Stormy Daniels. Now, I'm not a big Tom Cruise fan, but I just sat down at the recommendation of our good friend Steve from Georgia Stan and watched the film American Made. And it was an enjoyable little romp. And part and parcel of it is a shit ton of money laundering. And I'm just kind of wondering, because I don't have the answer here. Maybe our buddy Billable Rick knows more about this sort of thing. Doesn't that smell like money laundering? Where'd the money come from? I mean, we know, for instance, that in the past, that the Caratine Caligula used his charitable foundation's money to buy a 6-foot-tall, life-size portrait of himself, or some variation on the concept, that he hung in that tacky pile of bricks down in Florida. And it is. It's a tacky pile of bricks, and it's an awful painting. So, despite the best efforts of the for-profit media to not let this turn into a story, this thing keeps growing legs. And it keeps getting seedier and more sordid. Now, remember, we had a national conniption. And every good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republican was rot and plumb beside him and herself over a single act of fellatio. We're not even, and that's where it comes, that's where the business about it depends on what the definition of is. We had months-long, fulminated, utterly pornographically pyrotechnic conversations on right-wing hate radio for years over whether a single act of fellatio constitutes sex. We really did. I remember it. I was a talk radio fan at the time, and I was on the road a lot. And the only thing on the goddamn radio was that oxymoron gas bag. My friends, I don't care how the Democrats spin it. Oral sex is sex. Just ask my wife. I keep her in a pit. I'm sorry, Consuela. Yes, here's your cigar box with $10,000 in it. Bring me back $10,000 worth of street drugs. Chop, chop. Fast like bunny. Daddy's starting to Jones.
And it wasn't just him. You know, it was Hannity and it was O'Reilly. And it was the Savage Wiener. Savage.
And perhaps in the early days of the Beckerhead, and, you know, Alex Jones was just a weird dream in the mind of some amorphous, multi-limbed creature from Norblap 9, but they were all obsessed with it.
William Jefferson Blythe Clinton can say that oral sex isn't sex all he wants to, but the fact of the matter is, what will we tell the children? My friends, oral sex is sex. That's why sex comes after the word oral.
And so there was this months, weeks, years long discussion of the finer distinctions between fellatio and coitus. And there was no evidence whatsoever of say, you know, Hillary Clinton.
The devil!
Looking at Kenneth Starr and saying, and I walked in and there he was, a-rutting on Mayella. It wasn't there. There was no such allegation.
And then there was the bit with the cigar and the pizza delivery. But it all circled around getting head. Now, fast forward to what was then, you know, about maybe 10 years' time, 96 to 06, and Donald Trump, a 59-year-old man, is up there just a sweating and a grunting and a beckoning and pajama bottoming as she comes out of the bathroom and yeah, get over. Come on over here. Really, really. No condoms, no nothing, and just doing his nastiest nasty with what little he has to work with. And from the Republicans, the same Republicans, in many instances, who were beside themselves just scant years ago, and you know, flash it forward another 10 years, and there's no, you know, they hated Hillary for standing by Bill and not just running out and getting a divorce. But all you get now is, at most, you get a, oh, poor melanoma. Melanoma was a birther. She stood right there in front of the cameras and said, I too am thinking this Kenyan Muslim usurper probably not born in the United States like me on south side of Chicago. You get the idea. And there are more lurid details out of this Stormy Daniels thing than Ken Starr was able to uncover with all of in excess of $70 million taxpayer dollars at his disposal. Ho-hum. Ho-hum. And so, you know, I can't speak for where you are, but I can tell you where I am. And where I am is here. This. Any Republican who uttered so much as a fucking peep about Bill Clinton's sexual peccadilloes, who isn't out in the streets demanding impeachment hearings over this, which he, by the way, has already lied to the American people about, well, if there was any doubt before, and quite honestly there wasn't, you're a bunch of goddamn hypocrites. You're a bunch of pathetic political monkeys who will dance for the coins, symbolic and metaphorical coins that the various think tanks and dark money groups of the GOP will throw your way. Well, yeah, sure. I mean, he has unsafe sex months after his wife gives birth to another son, and he fat shames her and stuff. But hey, look, corporations got a tax break. Merca, hell yeah. Fuck a bunch of that. Really. Meanwhile, Ron in Raleigh writes, I wonder how it is, subject line. This thing with Stormy Daniels has got me wondering, how is it that the party of God seems to be able to ignore moral turpitude of all sorts, while the Democrats will throw anyone with the slightest taint at you, Ron said taint, of sexuality under the bus? For instance, Gary Hart was caught with a woman on his lap, fully clothed.
That was it for his political career. Anthony Weiner was found to have sexted an underage girl, no real physical contact, and his ass is in the Gray Bar Hotel. Elliot Spitzer employed a call girl paying with his own money, and his career was done. Meanwhile, Mark Sanford hiked the Appalachian Trail, code for visiting his mistress, and he gets elected to Congress. Diaper Dave Vitter's on the John list of the madam, and he gets elected to the Senate. Dolt 45's transgressions are too numerous to list. Let's just say he's an adulterer, sexual predator, liar, racist, and he's the goddamn president of the United States. How the hell can these people ignore all this shit, not once, but every time? Hypocrisy, thy name is Republican. And look, here in the waning years of the second decade of the 21st century, let me simply say that I didn't think after the late 1990s that I would be sitting here 20 fucking years later talking about this shit. But like a dumbass, I overestimated the American people. And so we are. And I'm talking about it because the fucking for-profit media, for the most part, won't.
Oh, he said shithole.
Well, yeah, that's important too. It's very important. He's a vulgar fucking pig. And you know, if only the for-profit media could understand, there's a nexus between calling countries shitholes and saying that all Haitians have AIDS and the Nigerians will never go back to their goddamn huts after they come to America, and sleazing around with anything that has a vagina and is within the reach of your inch and a half fucking dick. And bless your heart, Ron, and I don't mean that in the Southern way. You managed to go through that litany and you didn't even bring up Al Franken, who didn't do anything.
Oh, he touched my waist. Me too!
And had his political career destroyed by the Upright Democratic Christian Ladies Brigade. Pisses me off. I haven't seen lately where the Upright Christian Democratic Ladies Brigade has been marching over to the goddamn White House.
Ooh, Kamala Harris called for him to resign. Ooh, Kirsten Gillibrand called for him to resign.
Yeah, okay, so you checked that fucking box off, didn't you? Jesus Christ, can you imagine? Al Franken wouldn't even be a greasy spot if he, in abeyance of his 50-year-long marriage or 40-year marriage, whatever it is, had gone romping around with a porn star sex worker. If he'd done that, I think he would have sent himself into outer space just for the undignified filth of it. But the President of the United States of America turns out to be a, what's the word we're looking for here? Whoremonger. And you can't hardly get the for-profit media to pay attention. We'll maybe get into this in the next hour, but Jesus jumping Christ. The New York Times devoted its op-ed page to giving free ink to a bunch of fucking trumpansies, a bunch of goddamn maggots.
Who said, well, you know, of course he's vulgar, but look, lower taxes for corporations. America's being great again, and Mexico's going to pay for the wall.
Oh, that's true. I did. The Clarity points out, you chastised Thomas yesterday for sizing dicks. Well, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. I guess that's even a little bit of a joke, isn't it? Now that, you know, there's a saying here in the hills. Because we are known for occasionally being a mite profane. Never forget the first time I heard it. A friend of mine looked at me and said, Bob, it's a lot like a 2-inch dick. It's all right around the house, but it ain't worth a fuck on the road. There you go. But you know that jiggling adipose lump of lump of profanity and vulgarity. What could you do? Roll him in flour and measure the wet spot. Hey. Well, for once it wasn't y'all, it was me. It's not about you, it's about me. I'm the one that took the program into the gutter. No, goddammit, the President of the United States took this program into the gutter. That's all there is to it. So we're going to take a little break. It's Thursday, so that means we've got the Green News Report. Hey, can we finish off the last $30 so that we've only got 200 and 200 tomorrow? 3 at 10, 10 at 3. Oh, really? We're going to take 10 people at $3? I mean, okay, whatever. But can we just start by getting it down to $200? Remember how this is working. This is a month-long experiment. I'm keeping track of all the subscriptions, and then we're going to see how much the subscriptions add up to in terms of funding the whole broadcast month. And if we can get just a couple more days in of our fundraising goal, then we can have a whole bunch, at least 5 days of fundraising free radio. Wouldn't that be freaking awesome? And we need to do 230 tonight and 200 tomorrow to be able to get there. So that's where this all stands. All right. Let's see. Who was it that loved the Steely Dan the other night? You're going to get another dose. Because I love this song, too. All right. I've got Richard in New Jersey. Stay on the line. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after the break. This is The Horn, Thorn in the Side Thursday. I'm Bob.
It's Thursday, January 18, 2018.
It's already been called one of the worst oil ship disasters in decades.
Damaged and burning Iranian oil tanker sinks off the coast of China.
We're now seeing virtually no males being born.
Warmer temperatures at the Great Barrier Reef causing sea turtles to be born female. New study warns ocean dead zones are dramatically expanding. Plus,
my greatest hope is making sure that Ford is at the forefront of all that, so around another 114 years.
Big shift at the Detroit Auto Show as Ford goes all in on electric vehicles.
All of those big shifts and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I mean, I think President Trump should take credit for solving global warming. Yeah. And look at how cold it is. That's just another accomplishment.
Oh, Fox News, don't ever change.
Don't worry, they never will.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I guess we have to start with the bad news in the East China Sea.
Yes, unfortunately, that large Iranian oil tanker that's been ablaze for more than a week after it collided with another ship in the East China Sea has now sunk, leaving miles-long flaming oil slicks. The tanker's crew did not survive. AP reports that Chinese divers will try to pump out the sunken ship's fuel tanks before leaks can contaminate the seabed, but unfortunately, the tanker's cargo of extremely toxic oil condensate will likely leave a poisonous plume in the water.
And this is not a regular oil spill. This is condensate. You can't see it. It's not visible, and it's incredibly toxic?
Yes, it's impossible to clean up, and it is poisonous.
So it's just going to be burning and killing things for quite some time.
Yes, it is.
Great.
And human impacts on the ocean are increasing. A new study concludes that coral bleaching, once exceedingly rare, is now occurring every 5 to 6 years, giving coral reefs no time to recover between bleaching events. Bleaching is caused by high ocean temperatures, which in turn are caused by man-made global warming.
And is a better way to describe bleaching killing? Just this coral just dies?
Coral bleaching is a severely stressed reef. It can still recover, but it takes about 10 years. This gives them no time at all.
Gotcha.
And a separate study finds that dead zones in the ocean are spreading. Dead zones are areas with zero oxygen in which marine life can't survive and are caused by fertilizer and sewage runoff and global warming because warm waters hold less oxygen. Dead zones have now quadrupled in size since 1950, while the number of sites with very low oxygen near the coasts have multiplied tenfold. The researchers show, however, that pilot projects in Britain that reduced runoff through improved farming and sewage practices showed that coastal dead zones are reversible.
But not here in the U.S., where Donald Trump is trying to reverse the waters of the U.S. Act in order to, I guess, increase farm runoff again?
That's probably what will happen.
Well, you know, you got to overturn those Obama regulations no matter what.
Scientists say that rising temperatures at Australia's Great Barrier Reef are causing more green turtles to be born female. The gender of green sea turtles is determined by the temperature of the sand where the eggs are incubating, and the researchers say that of the hundreds of thousands of green sea turtles they studied on the northern part of the reef, 99% were female, and that has serious implications for the species, according to Dermot O'Gorney, head of the World Wildlife Fund in Australia.
We're now seeing on those northern beaches virtually no males being born, all females, and that really rings alarm bells for the long-term survival of those northern green turtle populations.
Yeah, I'd say it rings alarm bell for the short-term survival of those turtles.
Finally, a seismic shift at the Detroit International Auto Show underway in Michigan. While self-driving cars are getting all the attention, Ford Motor Company announced that it is doubling its investment in electric cars, investing $11 billion to bring 40 electrified models to market in 4 years. Global demand for electric cars is projected to rise rapidly, especially in China. China and Europe, where governments have set deadlines to phase out conventional gasoline and diesel engines. Ford Chairman Bill Ford says it's the smart move if you want to stay in business.
You know, we've been in business 114 years. There have been tremendous shifts over those years. And my greatest hope is, and my greatest focus, is making sure that Ford is at the forefront of all that, so around another 114 years.
So 40 electrified Ford models coming soon?
By 2022.
Well, I think we've long warned everyone, it's time to get rid of those internal combustion engines. Just saying, sell them while you can. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Fourteen minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 18th of January, 2018. I'm Bob. And, you know, there's so much to share this evening. My God, maybe while I'm sitting here talking to Rich, everybody go and look up Carl Higbie. Carl, C-A-R-L, Higbie, H-I-G-B-I-E. He was a Trump appointee. He has apparently resigned. Wait till you hear what he said. Hoo-wee, Uncle Jed. But in the meantime, because he's been very, very patient, let's go and check in with Rich in Jersey. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Bob. I don't know if you can hear me okay.
I can hear you, but whatever's in the background needs to get turned down.
Is there anything in the background now?
I don't hear it.
Okay. Yeah, I sent you an email. I don't know if you got it.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, you know, as much as I hate what the Republicans do, there's hypocrisy in the Democrats that drives me crazy, too. As a witness, what you're reading on my email, I really feel that this whole act of them laying down all the time, you know, they really do lay down all the time. And I've been a Democrat my whole life, but it really bugs me that they don't take a principled stand like they should be doing right now with Trump being somebody that has to be immediately impeached. If we can impeach Clinton for his minor dalliances, we'd certainly have to impeach this guy for his major lack of any kind of morality. Come on.
Oh, but here's what they say. Here's what the Republicans say, Rich. Right? Bill Clinton was not impeached for that thing that he did with Miss Lewinsky. He was impeached for lying under oath. That's what he was impeached for.
Well, if that's the reason for impeachment, this guy, Trump, has told well over 2,000 lies by this point, and he's still in there. He's already broken his oath of office to the Constitution at least 100 times, and yet he's still there. So how do they justify that?
Well, he wasn't under oath. He hasn't been under oath yet. But the fact of the matter is, if he lied his sorry orange ass off with his hand on a stack of Bibles, the Republicans would still say, well, he's our president. Give him a chance.
I understand that, but Democrats still need to be standing up strong every single day in Congress and not acting like the whipped cars I said they were in the email I sent you.
I don't disagree. Now let's.
So what's the answer?
Well, okay, let's backtrack just a minute. And sort of take a look let's pull back from the Impressionist painting until we can see the whole thing.
All right.
And I'm sure that I will in short order be accused of being a centrist or a neoliberal shill or an establishment. Blah, blah. You know, all those things that those people with the rose emojis on their Twitter handles say. But anyway, just and these are just simple questions, and I'm not asking, I'm not talking down. We're just working through
right.
this. Do we want control of the House of Representatives in the November elections?
Hell yeah.
Do we want control of the Senate in the November 2018 elections?
A lower shop, it's possible.
Okay. That being the case, if, and you, maybe I'm completely wrong, but if you provide, are you any kind of a sports fan, Rich?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you know yeah. what you know what I'm talking about when I say when I say bulletin board material, right?
Right, right.
Well, if we're all if the politicians, the Democratic politicians, are all running around screaming impeachment, and not just two or three, then the entirety of Republican campaign will be, you can't let Democrats have power. All they want to do is take your beloved president away from you. They want to cancel out your vote. And all them people who worked so hard to make him president so we could make America great again. You better get out, and you better get your good white friends to vote with you. Because otherwise, them Democrats, if they get to Congress, they're going to come after beloved Donald Trump.
Only one problem with that point of view. The women are going to rise up like crazy this year. The women in this country are going to rise up like crazy.
Well, I mean, I'm
35%.
I'm okay with that, but so they're going to behave. Okay, let's talk about white women. The white women are going to be, this year, finally, the white women are going to behave contrary to type. Because remember, the white women voted by a majority for Donald Trump in 2016. They're going to stop doing that this year.
I believe they will.
63% of white women in Alabama voted for a pedophile, but they're done with that now.
I don't care about Alabama.
Well, I mean, it's but Rich, I mean, you better care about Alabama, because white women in Alabama ain't much different than white women in Louisiana or Mississippi or Tennessee or Kentucky or Georgia or Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, and they were sufficient to get the job done in places like Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. You see my point?
Yeah, but that's where the big change is going to happen, in the Great Lakes states. Not so much in the South, but in the Great Lakes states, which are the difference between Hillary being president and Trump being president. That's where the change is going to be, the big change. In places where they voted for Peckerhead last year, but this year they're going to want their rights, and they're well-educated up in those Great Lakes states. I don't have any hope ever for Alabama, Louisiana, or Mississippi voting blue, because they're going to do whatever the husbands tell them to, because the husbands are beating the shit out of them.
Well, I mean, and I'm not necessarily claiming that I'm absolutely right on this.
Right.
But making predictions about what look, women of color got it right in 2016. I mean, they got it. They got A++ right. People who aren't white got it right in 2016.
That's right. It's
the white folks that keep shitting on the country. And as a white folks who lives among a whole bunch of white folks in a place like West Virginia, I don't necessarily see them turning around.
You're right, they won't.
And so, whatever demographic group it is, every demographic group that knows how to answer that, that knew how to answer that question, you know, on the one question quadrennial national IQ test from November 2016, whatever those groups are, they're going to have to turn out the vote in historic numbers, because especially with the House of Representatives, Rich. With the House, the gerrymandering is so bad that you're going to have to absolutely overwhelm. It's almost like you're going to have to vote at 1.5 to 2 times the Republican vote just to draw even. That's how nefarious, that's how pernicious the gerrymandering is in this country.
I understand that, but getting back to what you said before about Alabama, didn't the blue vote overwhelm in Alabama and keep that pedophile from getting elected?
No, it didn't.
It didn't overwhelm, but surely overwhelmed in terms of the fact that
there were overwhelming numbers, but when you get right down to it, the big difference was the 20,000 Alabamians, the 20,000 Republicans who wrote in somebody else instead of Roy Tola Moore, who made it possible for Doug Jones to win. There's not going to be a pedophile running in every Republican race, or in every race in this country. There's not going to be a pedophile Republican running.
I'm not sure about that. I think they're all pedophiles, pederasts. They don't want to pay for babies after they're born. They're baby killers. They're just baby killers at birth. They're immoral. All they care about is power. All they do is hide behind their evangelical bullcrap and pretend that they care about God. They don't care about God. God to them is the almighty buck and power.
That sounds about right. But I don't think you're going to have cases of as blatantly obvious as was Roy Tola Moore. And so my thesis stands that you're going to have to get, especially in, okay, it's different in the Senate because those are statewide races. But in House district races, you're going to have to get something like 2-1 turnout.
Right.
Just to overwhelm the gerrymandering. And to get back to the original point, if at the same time the Republicans are motivated by the need to keep, and let's face it, impeachment is a long shot. The motivational power of saying they're going to take your beloved president away from you, and then America ain't going to be great again no more. And we ain't going to have no wall to keep out the Mexican rapists. Okay, that is appealing to that kind of dog whistle racism is huge.
Right.
A huge motivator inside Republican voting demographics.
Well, don't get me wrong, all right? Despite what I've been saying, I'm basically cynical like you on the whole issue. Not because I read and think like you. And the people that elected Trump are just like Trump. They don't read or think. And that's going to be what it's going to be all about. They're going to continue not to read, not to think, and worry about dear leader. I get that. You're right. I agree with you. It's just that I'm trying to have some semblance of optimism coming into November 2018. I'll probably be wrong, but I'm trying to stay optimistic about a real change happening.
I understand that. And I'm not trying to throw cold water on anything, Rich.
Mm-hmm. Are you all?
And it is, as Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana, just wrote in and said, Rich is absolutely right, Bob. The Dems always seem to lay down and try to reason with unreasonable people. I want control too, but I have little faith the Dems have the sack to use it if they have it. There are too many of them who are perfectly happy being the Washington generals while the Republicans are the Globetrotters. Yeah, because the generals got paid too.
Right. Just less and with a lot more shame.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like one of the things that Democrats come from, a place of shame, because they try to be moral. And morality, power is amoral. They haven't gotten that letter yet. That power itself is amoral. Republicans know that. They hide behind the veer of morality, but they're basically amoral.
Power is moral neutral. It's right. In the exercise of that power, you find out what kind of morality and what kind of ethical center the wielder has.
Right. And the Democrats just don't have The Republicans don't have a moral center. They nip around the edges of morality just enough to fool the rubes, and then they go for your jugular vein. And they've always done that as long as I've been alive, in my recollection. They've always done that. They do it a lot of times with a smile on their face while they're sticking the knife in your back. Yeah, I mean, you really can't deal with that kind of hypocrisy without going down in the mud with them.
No, and there's a balance to be struck there, and the balance is between, on the one hand, when somebody comes up and punches you in the mouth, you don't whip out your guitar and sing Kumbaya to them,
yeah,
or your kazoo. On the other hand,
there's the
warning attributed to Twain, where he said, "Never wrestle with a pig in shit." You both get covered in shit, and the pig enjoys it.
Exactly. You know, that's true. But we got to do something different, Bob. We got to rise up. Now, of course, 2 days from now, we're going to have a women's march, a national women's march. If that starts becoming a very frequent thing, the Republicans who only fear not getting reelected, it may start to get them a little worried. And when they get a little worried, they start scampering around like chickens without their heads on. Because beneath that veneer of aggressiveness is the pussies underneath that veneer of aggressiveness. They really don't have backbones. That's why you always hear the saying, Democrats fall in love, but Republicans fall in line. They're happy with a dear leader.
Right, you know, right. It's like something I heard Van Jones say years and years and years ago. The Republicans talk about individuality, and then they vote collectively.
Exactly.
Democrats talk about collectivity, and then they vote individually.
Right. Well, now it's time for us to vote collectively.
And you know, that was probably 8 years ago I heard him say that. And it is, and it could not have been more true than it was in 2016. You had a significant number of people who called themselves progressives or Democrats who, for the very life of them, could not vote for the collective good of their country.
Yeah,
They voted their consciences,
right.
And they talked in their little cliques about how the lesser of two evils is still evil.
Right.
And fucked their country.
Right. Abdication. Total abdication of being a true patriot and standing up for your country.
And the worst part of it was they fucked their country in direct contravention of what the candidate they had supported in the primaries asked them to do.
I love Bernie, but he's wrong about this. The lesser of two evils is still evil. See how pure I am? Me, look at my shiny, sparkly wings.
Well, I did vote for Bernie in the primary, but I voted for Hillary in the general election.
It's the same thing I did.
Yeah. But I, you know,
and this is by no means a blanket, absolution of the Democratic Party. They were stupid.
Yeah.
Not malicious. Not evil. You know, no matter how many of those strange little people think that Debbie Wasserman Schultz bumped off Seth Rich. They didn't. And in any opportunity, and I'm going to posit this as a law of politics. In any opportunity where Democrats either acted stupidly or maliciously, 99.9% of the time, if you cast your confirmation biases aside, what you find out is they were stupid. We are very good at being stupid, which I think goes back to your thesis.
So how do we turn it around, Bob?
Well, there are a lot of different aspects. It's like the difference between looking at a sphere versus looking at a quartz crystal.
Okay.
That quartz crystal has a lot of angles.
That's right.
And there are little things. One, for yourself, and this is how I look at any primary. Commit to your candidate in the primary. Work your ass off for your candidate in the primary. If your candidate loses in the primary, take a moment, feel sad, whatever. Even look at, you know, was it we didn't work hard enough to get our candidate elected? Was it our candidate's ideas didn't resonate? Maybe our candidate said stupid things. Or maybe the electorate just liked the other candidate better. And having done whatever navel gazing is necessary, then understand the importance of the collective good of the entire nation and go and vote for your party's nominee in November. It ain't rocket science.
Right. Well, that's kind of what I do anyway now.
Well, no, that's what you do. That's what I do. I mean, that's how I was taught.
Right.
You know, you don't get this stuff by osmosis in the womb. It is a learned thing. And I have learned that things are better when my party is in power.
Exactly.
And understand that a Democrat in Alabama is not going to be the same thing as a Democrat in Massachusetts.
Right.
We don't have that. Now, a Democrat in Alabama, or a Republican in Alabama, is pretty much the same thing as a Republican in, say, Montana.
Right.
They're all knucking futs, and they're all obsessed with little fetuses, and they're all racists, and they're all bigots, and they're all, most all of them, are homophobes and xenophobes, because all those hatreds are the glue that binds the modern Republican Party together.
Right.
They are bound together by their hatreds and their fears.
Right.
Democrats aren't bound together very well at all because we have so many differing aspirations.
But we have a fatal flaw to the power process in this country, as I see it right now. We act civilized. They don't. That's a fatal flaw for us currently. We act too civilized.
And we play nice, and we bring our kazoos, and we play a mean chorus of Kumbaya.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But consider just by example. Because of the whole shithole controversy, in which we found out further evidence of just how disgusting a racist Donald Trump is. Tom Cotton has come gurgling and bobbling into the light.
What a jerk off he is.
He is that. And he's he shares the same degree of vitriolic racism. He may not be as much of a disgusting pervert as Donald Trump is, but he shares a lot, and that's maybe only because we haven't found out. But take, for instance, the fact that constituent groups like Indivisible Arkansas, you know who Indivisible are?
One of them, yeah.
Yeah, they put pressure on elected representatives over things like health care. Well, other Indivisible Arkansas and other groups have been visiting and phoning and emailing Tom Cotton. I mean, this is the kind of thing you do if you're trying to get policy changes from one of your elected representatives. And even if you're on the side that loses, you still have the right to address your elected representatives on the issues that matter to you. Are we still in agreement?
Yep. Absolutely.
Tom Cotton, for instance, is not the senator for the Republicans in Arkansas. He is a senator for all the citizens of Arkansas. We're still there, right?
Right.
Well, Tom Cotton apparently is convinced that, no, he is only the senator for the people who voted for him or gave him lots of money.
Right.
He's a senator for the donor class. He's a senator for...
Right.
You get the idea.
The VIPs.
And the fetus fetishists and the xenophobes and the homophobes and all of that stuff.
Well, those are all the VIPs, all of them.
Well, it turns out that Tom Cotton, and it's not Arkansas Indivisible, it's Ozark Indivisible. And they've been working issues like health care and immigration. And they've been asking their members to call Tom Cotton's office. And Tom Cotton's office responded to Ozark Indivisible with the following, and I am reading directly from the letter. They sent out a letter. It's dated October, but apparently it just now arrived.
Oh, how convenient.
This letter is immediate notification that all communication must cease and desist immediately with all offices of U.S. Senator Tom Cotton. All other contact will be deemed harassment and will be reported to the United States Capitol Police. Signed, the Office of U.S. Senator Tom Cotton. So,
that's an empty threat.
So here's a little punk-ass puke who runs around waving the bloody shirt from his service in Iraq and, hey, look, everybody, I done got me one of them bronze stars. And talks about how he done went to Harvard twice and things. And the precious little goddamn snowflake can't even deal with his own constituent mail. Now, nobody's writing Tom Cotton and threatening his life or anything. They're just saying, hey, Tom Cotton, why don't you try... for once in your life, not being a fucking dick.
Right.
And apparently, Tom and his staff need a safe space.
What a bunch of babies.
And so, and you know, they're not even very good at it. This letter is immediate notification that all communication must cease and desist immediately. Well, I guess that's immediacy squared? Or is it like algebra, where if you multiply immediate by immediate, you get deliberate or something, and it slows? I don't know. I can't do the math. Meanwhile, Tom Cotton's office will not respond. They've gone to their safe space, and they're hiding in their little snowflake room. Another individual has received the letter. That person said, I received a letter from the office of U.S. Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas after calling and expressing my grave concerns over his actions in support of this administration's agenda concerning a wide variety of subjects, from the attack on our health care, DACA, and immigration issues, to national security, to the rise of white nationalist fascism, to the environment, the gutting of our State Department, the attack on the free press, and similar deeply troubling actions and motives I've seen Senator Cotton support and condone. It was odd to receive this letter, as I've called other members of Congress to express my strong thoughts and opinions about their actions, and thought this to be not only my duty as an American citizen, but my First Amendment right granted all U.S. citizens by our U.S. Constitution and foundation of our democracy. But no. No. So,
well, what he needs to have is about 10,000 letters testing his resolve with doing any kind of enforcement, legal enforcement of a cease and desist nature. I'd love to see that. He wouldn't be able to do shit, pardon my French. What would he do? First of all, he doesn't have a legal leg to stand on. It's all an empty threat. He can't keep his constituency from emailing him or writing him or walking into his office just because they didn't vote for him. He's out of his mind. He would never be able to win a case in court on that. All it would take is, as we say, Italians say, the colluders for the, a whole bunch of people to stand up, write him a letter, then follow up by going into his office and saying, lock me up if you think you can get away with it for what I did. You don't have a leg to stand on.
It's interesting. Cotton's office kind of got caught. And having been caught, they pulled the Trump defense and said, well, you know, it was because of this. It was because of the tough language. So Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, who is herself an Arkansan, and is one for talking about tough language alongside Kirsten Nielsen or whatever her name is. What it boils down to is they can dish it out, but they can't take it.
Exactly.
Because among other things, Tom Cotton called. I believe it was Tom Cotton who called Dick Durbin a liar the other day.
Yep. I want Dick Durbin to.
Meanwhile, desperately trying to get cover, John Noonan, counselor to Cotton on military and defense affairs, said the letter was sent to a constituent who threatened a 19-year-old intern. Letter went out in October to one constituent who called one of our 19-year-olds a C-word and threatened her physically. So then they challenged it, and Ozark Indivisible tweeted that its members had received the same letter. It wasn't just one letter. In other words, Cotton and his office are a bunch of goddamn liars and chicken shits.
Right. Of course.
And then John Noonan backtracked and said, it turns out that letter had a threatening tone. The tone was threatening, but no threats were made, but the C word was invoked.
Oh, which one, the CU or the CO?
There were three asterisks, so I'm thinking it's the one that's followed by you.
Okay. Yeah, that's the worst one.
Yeah.
What a bunch of children. What a bunch of unformed, unindividualized.
See, this, now, Rich,
rear-end lickers.
This is where not being a hillbilly or a redneck this is where it's a bad thing not to be one. Because, see, you're struggling, Rich, to find good, upstanding, decent, find them in the dictionary words to describe how awful they are, when I, as a redneck and a hillbilly, can say, they're a bunch of goddamn piss ants.
That's what they are, a bunch of piss ants. You're right. They're worse than piss ants. They're loaded piss ants. They're piss amoebas.
Hey, Rich, our conversations are always great, and I enjoy the hell out of them. I do.
I'll let you go talk to somebody else now. I got to eat my dinner. Always a pleasure, Bob Kincaid. Oh. By the way, I found the dust jacket for that CD I wanted to send you. You expect it in the mail the next couple of days.
Okay, great. Thanks, Rich. You take care.
You're welcome. Have a good night.
You too.
Take
Bye
care.
Now.
Bye.
That's our buddy Rich up in New Jersey, and I'm not casting any aspersions. It's just sometimes you need the color that Southern English provides. Piss ant, shit weasel, blivet. I love blivet. 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound onion bag. Hey, look, another word for Tom Cotton. Blivet. I bet they know what blivets are in Arkansas. Yeah, meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa points out, speaking of snowflakes hiding away in their safe space, can we call out, I think you just did. Can we call out Scott and Punky to come out and either give us the movie review or pay the bookie? Earther is waiting for his money, damn it. It is the 18th of January. That is true. I should have taken a minute with Rich, because I got a feeling he knows what authentic means. And shared the hillbilly spaghetti sauce recipe with him to see if it would pass muster in Jersey. Well, maybe another time. All right, you're on the hot seat, Scott. Oh, Scott.
Well, I'm sorry, I couldn't find the little button to unmute myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I got a comment about something that you and Rich were talking about.
Yes.
And it centers mainly on the notion that in 2018, in the midterms, we won't necessarily need a pedophile nut bucket, you know, in all of the races, whether they be House or whether they be Senate. And my contention is we won't need a nut bucket or a pedophile in all of the Senate and House races coming up this November. And I don't know what, there was something that one of you said in the conversation, but it suddenly dawned on me that except for a rather brief period, the Republicans have been in charge of the House of Representatives pretty much consistently through since 1994. There was that brief flurry of sanity when Obama was president, that the Democrats controlled the House. But I'm pretty sure, other than that, the Republicans have held it not quite as long as the Democrats did from the time of, they held it for like the better part of 40 years, the House, before Gingrich and his Contract on America kicked in 94. And what dawned on me was the fact that I kind of think that in their heart of hearts, to the extent that Republicans have hearts, especially Republican representatives, I kind of think that they, in their heart of hearts, they know that the jig is up, that it has run its course. Well, some may say, well, no, they weren't in charge as long as the Democrats were, from Roosevelt on, or from Eisenhower on through 1994, but they don't need to be. They get way more bad shit done in a shorter period of time than the Democrats generally do. Okay, but anyway, getting back to the notion of not needing a pedophile to be running in these Republican races, I don't think we'll need them, simply because in enough vulnerable places, I mean, we're only talking about the Democrats winning 24 House seats to regain control, and I just think that number is going to be fairly easily accomplished in those vulnerable exurb big city races this November. And like I say, I could be totally wrong. I so often am.
No, but I do appreciate your unrelenting optimism.
Yeah, relentless is. I'm a relentless optimist.
Yes, I go back to something Asa quoted me a minute ago to myself. He said, as the prophet Bob Kincaid once said, gerrymandering is so bad that the dadgum electoral map looks like an etch-a-sketch on acid.
Yeah, I like that.
And it still does, with the addition of several squished spiders.
Yeah.
So, those urban centers that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Republicans gerrymandered their districts so as to make sure that those urban centers can't outweigh the Klansmen out in Busted Knuckle. And in some places, there's no getting around it because the population density is such that you just can't. But for the most part, you can. And for instance, there was a news out of the Supreme Court today that in North Carolina, where they got straight up caught trying to gerrymander the state so as to render irrelevant the black vote.
Yeah, I saw that.
Well, they're not going to have to redraw the maps for 2018, so it's unconstitutional gerrymandering, but we're going to have an election with it.
Yeah. Well, and like I say, that's why I put in the little proviso that it's going to be in those districts, those House districts, where the Republican who is there already better watch his or her ass, because the Democrats are definitely coming. And in those races, hell, I mean, right here in California, there's still a number of Republican House members, and a lot of them are vulnerable. So we'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to it, because I think
it'll be interesting to see what happens in what's his name, Daryl Issa's district.
Oh, well, he's not running again, and I can guarantee you, I will go on the record and guarantee you that that seat will be won by a Democrat, because a Democrat came within a twat hair's width of winning this last time around in 2016. It was an ex-military guy.
You're going to get me email for your point, for your reference point there. You realize
well,
that?
Well, I'm sorry. Okay, a guy's
pubic. A gnat's ass. A gnat's ass.
A gnat's ass.
Hair on a gnat's ass.
Yeah. But anyway, I don't know what happened here, but Punky decides to wake up all of a sudden. All right, but let's go on to the matter at hand that everybody is asking about.
now you're making me, you're making my liver quiver.
No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to make your thyroid thump or your liver quiver or your pancreas pound. I want to get right down to it.
All right.
I hope you wrote down, I hope you've been keeping close accounts on the number of dollars in the pool and have been keeping close track of who had which date.
Well, we're paying off in free bottles of Horn Nutraceuticals to answer your question. And the Earther has the 18th.
Okay.
Remember.
Oh, and speaking of nutraceuticals, the reason my friend wanted me to ask you about do these come in suppository form, some years ago, he had.
You're vamping now. Now, damn it.
Under a doctor's orders to use an opium suppository. This is like 40 years ago almost.
Jesus, and that sounds like something out of a William S. Burroughs novel.
Well, I come to think of it, I believe Burroughs was into opium. I know Lenny Bruce tried opium suppositories. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I had never heard of such a thing, so I asked him. It was some post-operative pain or something that the guy was going through. And
right,
I asked
where you
him,
couldn't you know, necessarily take it down the gullet or do it in an injectable form, right?
Yeah. And I asked him, I said, well, God, I've never heard of such a thing before. What was it like? And he said, Mary, he was a gay fellow. He said, Mary, before you get your finger out of your ass, you were asleep. So I don't know. You can take that to mean whatever you think it might. But anyway, we didn't call to talk about
suppositories. Yeah, the speculation will now cease.
Okay. All right. I am a little concerned that the way that I watched The Big Lebowski will throw a wrench into who had the right date. Because I began watching it on the night of the 15th, which was Monday.
When we talked.
Right?
Yes.
Right. As I said, I would do, and the old sweep second hand of the West clocks got up to midnight. So then it became Tuesday morning in the wee hours before the movie actually finished.
Now, so hold on. Wait. Time out.
Yeah.
This is not a 12-hour movie. So you're telling me that after we talked. And it was right as the program was ending at 6 o'clock Pacific time. It took you 4 hours?
No, I'm not telling you
5
that.
Hours?
No, I'm not telling you that. I'll tell you what I'm telling you if you'll let me.
I'm trying.
In the last hour or so of the night of the 15th, I began watching the movie. And owing to the fact that it's like almost a two-hour movie, it wasn't over until the start of the 16th. I mean, I watched it all in one piece. That viewing spanned from late night Monday into early morning Tuesday.
I think the start time is what matters.
Okay.
Although given the bizarre things that capture the attention of the Horn Family Community Congregation, we could probably have an argument about this that could last into 2018 and result in people not voting for Democrats.
Well, let's not do that. Now, I'm not going to tell you how to run the betting pool, but if I were doing it, I would probably give a prize to anybody who had the 15th or the 16th. And if anybody had the 15th and the 16th,
well, hell, they just need to run out and buy a lottery ticket is what they need to do.
Well, give them the entire jackpot.
Okay.
But anyway, now as to what I thought of the movie, now I'll be honest with you, Bob. I did not know what to expect. I knew, other than...
Well, you're not supposed to.
Well, other than Jeff Bridges being in it, I knew virtually nothing. Jeff Bridges and David Huddleston are the only two people I knew were in it, and then everything that you've said about it and the lines that you guys toss off, that's all I knew. So I really literally had no expectations whatsoever because I wouldn't have known what to expect. That and the white Russians. That's about all I knew about it.
But you know, when you've got an ensemble cast like Jeff Bridges and Steve Buscemi and John Goodman and why can I never
Julianne Moore?
Yeah, and heroin
the guy that was
heroin
in Barton.
Yeah.
Well, John Goodman, the other guy that was in Barton Fink. He was in Jurassic Park too, I think, wasn't he?
Well, and Steve in New York, who is our between him and Brother Deacon Asa, it's a competition to see who is the bigger dude. Steve in New York says under the subject line, "What to expect?" Even people who watch it don't know what to expect.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. That's precisely what I'm getting at. Did you ever, from several years ago, there was a movie called The Grand Budapest Hotel?
Yes.
Did you ever see that?
No, I didn't. I have not.
All right. I compare it on one level to my watching of The Grand Budapest Hotel, because I watched that thing. Again, going into it, not knowing a thing about it. And by the time it was over, I had no idea what the hell to make of it. So I think Big Lebowski is going to be one of those films that the more I watch it, the more I'll come to love it as much as you guys do. I mean, I liked it on a single viewing. Liked it a lot, actually, because it was very funny.
It begs for rewatching. It really does. It's one of those things that every time you watch it, you get a little bit more out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman is who I was thinking of. And then Darlene in Connecticut mentioned Sam Elliott and Steve and John Turturro. Nobody fucks with
Turturro is the one I was trying to think of.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know the Coens had anything to do with that. This is how little I knew about the movie.
Oh, you didn't realize it was a Coen Brothers film?
No.
Well, that's a little bit of a tell in its own right.
Earlier this week, that was like the last remaining virgin territory of myself. I was a Lebowski virgin.
But not a Coen Brothers virgin.
No, I've seen some of their other films.
I mean, you mentioned Barton Fink.
Yeah, Barton Fink and...
Raising Arizona.
Didn't they do the one where the woman comes to the door for the date and the guy has whacked off?
I don't know. That's something. There's Something About Mary. I don't think that's a Coen Brothers film. Maybe I'm wrong. But, you know, okay, Raising Arizona. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, Oh, Brother, yeah. But I see what all the fuss is about, even though it was a little confusing and it bears watching many, many more times. And I'm sorry it took so long. Well, hell, I am.
No, you're not. You kept the Horn Family Community Congregation on the edge of their seats, and you did it on purpose, and you may as well admit it, okay?
Well, on purpose in the sense that I always had choice in the matter. I created the reality that you turned
a simple suggestion into a bit, Scott.
A fucking epic poem. Yeah. Well, yeah. All right. In that case, you're right. But one of the biggest movies of the late 90s was Pulp Fiction. And it had been out probably 10 years by the time I saw it. Maybe not quite 10 years, 7 years. And that one blew me away. That was one of the best films I'd ever seen. But then again, you know, Quentin Tarantino can do anything. He's, at least the films of his that I've seen, they've all been good.
Okay, so is there, did anything, by the way, note coming in from Labor Man, old Punky's making my dog go nuts looking for him, too funny.
Oh, so. I'm sorry. Punky
has his own fan club.
Yeah, well, it's getting to be that way.
How many radio programs are there out there that has a cockatiel with his own fan club that isn't, you know, well, like in the studio?
Well, do you remember the stock expert, so-called Joe Granville?
Yes.
Okay. Granville lived in Kansas City when I lived there, and he had an afternoon radio show, and I forget his name, but he had a parrot who he would squawk in the background every now and again. And some say that Granville wasn't the stock expert in the family, that the parrot was, that every day Granville would put the stock pages down on the table, and the bird would fly over and walk around, and when it did its little birdie dump, whatever listing it landed on the New York Stock Exchange, that's what Joe would invest in. Now, I don't know if that's accurate or not, but he was a character.
Yeah, and he actually invented a tool that people use for analytical purposes and everything, right?
Oh, yeah, technical analysis. Never mind the price in... What is that? The P&E, price whatever index or...
Yeah, well, on balance volume. That was his big thing, on balance volume.
I guess you can remember this stuff. Usually, if I haven't called it to mind in recent years, it goes bye-bye. I, you know, reformat the drive every now and again in between my ears. But... He was a trip, and his listeners, if they didn't hear the parrot for a couple of days, because he used to do the show from his condo there in across from where the railroad station used to be, and but yeah, he's a lot of people thought he was nothing more than a charlatan, but there are fans of technical analysis as opposed to the other type, where you look at the board of directors and what the company makes and, you know, troughs and peaks was his thing.
Well, you know, the whenever somebody comes up with a how to buy stocks scam, I always think of Malachi Constant's daddy in Kurt Vonnegut's The Sirens of Titan, who became... immeasurably wealthy by starting with the first three letters of Genesis 1:1 and working his way forward and just buying stocks with those initials.
That's an interesting way to do it.
So like INT for in the beginning, and he bought international something or another.
Yeah.
So, on balance, see, there's one of those stocky sounding things. on balance, good or bad?
Well, I have a question, and maybe you or somebody can clear it up. The late John Polito, the little roly-poly guy with the little pencil-thin mustache.
Yes.
He kind of popped in there out of nowhere. What was his deal? I mean, I didn't get what his deal was. Was he a private eye wannabe? Was he working for the actual Lebowski, the big Lebowski? Because he was kind of there, and then he was kind of gone, and that was
it. There's an open question as to who the big Lebowski actually is.
Well, I took it to mean it was David Huddleston.
You're free to take that way.
Oh, no, we're not going to get into what was in the guy's suitcase in Pulp Fiction, are we?
No, but, I mean, it's you know... the dude is the big Lebowski, Lebowski, or the daughter.
Well, that's a good question.
Or the baby that's conceived.
Well, he won't be the big Lebowski for a while, because he was referred to as a little...
No, but you've got a Lebowski doing it with a Lebowski, and that's a big Lebowski.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that. You people have opened up a whole new world for me. I'm not going to get a... You think I don't get shit done now? Now watch me.
you'll come back to it. You'll come back to it.
Oh, I'm sure I will. As a matter of fact, I may go ahead and take your advice and buy... The Blu-ray or the DVD or whatever, Blu-ray if it's available. Punky, you're driving the dog crazy. And he's looking at me, we don't have a dog. there was another scene that cracked me up. Oh, yeah, I forget, I can't quote the line, but it ended with the phrase, nine-toed woman. Like, God. Well, there were a lot of lines in it that I mean, they were coming fast and furious. And I was really impressed with the dude's even keel. I mean,
he's unflappable.
Yeah, if half of that shit had happened to any of us, where does that come from?
There's a lot. That's the thing. In the Big Lebowski, there are a lot of life lessons, things you can live by. Not to be ruled by furies and passions, and not to be rule oriented. You know, God damn it, it's not Vietnam.
Walter was crazy for tying everything into Vietnam. Oh, he was doing what Trump does, tying everything to Crooked Hillary, so-called.
Yeah, but Walter Sobchak is a fraud. He's a fake Vietnam veteran. Just like he doesn't roll on Shabbos. It's not even Jewish.
Well, I have a friend like that. He claims, for years that I've known him, has claimed that he, you know, was in Vietnam, he flew planes for the Navy, off the carrier, blah, 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 blah. And he doesn't seem old enough to have done that. He's older than me, but not by that much.
I know a guy who's younger. I know a guy who's younger than me.
Yeah.
Who will tell anybody who bothers to ask about, you know, his time in the shit. And he's just good enough at it that, you know, somebody who doesn't know anything will go, "Wow, man, yeah, that's terrible. Yeah, no wonder your PTSD's acting up." Well, it's that and the Agent Orange. And it drives real Vietnam veterans right out of their trees.
Oh, yeah.
But once upon a time, he would sit and regale my father, who was a real live, honest to God World War II Navy veteran.
Yeah,
he would regale my father with, just trying to be simpatico and trying to have something to talk to him, but regale my father with the tales of his days in Vietnam.
Yeah,
and my father, who had been through real ordeals, had the grace not to look at him and say, you know, you are full of shit as a Christmas goose.
Yeah.
And then I'd get a phone call and hear about it, and Agnes would hear about it, and it kind of turned into a little inside joke inside the family.
This guy that I'm thinking of had a period of time where everything he said and did was motivated by, as he used to call it, the Peruvian marching powder.
Yes.
I think that's what he used to call it. So, and he also was a not insubstantial drinker. So it's possible that, you know, it's like the guy in the diner.
Yeah, the more he drank, the more flashbacks he'd have. Yeah, that.
Well, no, it's the guy in the diner. If you've ever been up and down the Pennsylvania Turnpike or the highway going through New Jersey into New York City, there are these diners where you go in, have a piece of pie and a cup of coffee, you know, take a leak, you know, before you're back on the road again. And there's always a guy sitting on the stool at the end of the counter, the guy in the diner, who no matter what you bring up, he's the world's foremost authority on that topic. And you got to wonder, why is this guy sitting on the last stool at the counter having all the answers to the world's problems at his immediate command?
Right.
He ought to be running for office or starting a foundation or, you know, something other than being the guy in the diner. Well, the simple answer is he don't know shit. So.
Yeah. No, I get. And you know, that's corollary to the guy who always either down talks or one ups whatever the other person says.
Yeah,
there's a great old story out there about a couple of guys who had been they'd bird hunted together for years, you know, duck hunted and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in that culture, it's all about, you know, the pedigree of your dog and how good your dog is and what a soft mouth the dog has when it goes to pick up the duck or the goose or whatever. And the one guy could never be. The one guy could never be impressed. Nothing ever impressed him. And finally, his buddy got a dog in the first. He was out hunting by himself with the dog the first time. He shoots the duck. The duck lands in the water, and lo and behold, the dog walks across the water, Jesus like,
yeah.
And picks up the duck and brings it back. And the guy's like, oh, I got him this time. Oh, he's gonna have to be impressed by this. So without saying anything, no lead in, no giveaway, they go out hunting and they shoot a duck, and he says, Bo, go get the duck. And Bo walks across the water, gets the duck, brings it back, and all smug like, the fellow looks at his buddy and says, well, what do you think about that, huh? His buddy looks at him and says, yeah, it's too bad. What do you mean? Your dog can't swim. Yeah, no cowbell for that one, I guess.
Well, I don't have... Well, wait a minute. Hold still.
Oh, well, I hope Punky won't mind.
He was on my shoulder. I was standing by the front door because the signal seems to be better. And when I rang the bell, he hightailed it back to his house. You and Rich were talking about something, or maybe it was during the Bobathon, the Filibobster. Either way, it still works. You were talking about Trump not rapping his rascal, his sexual Vietnam.
Yes, that was the phrase we used back a million years ago when I was riding my dinosaur to college. You know, rap that rascal.
Yeah. Well, it reminded me of a story about a fellow who didn't rap his either and ended up getting probably medical history's worst known case of something, you know, with the drip and with the sores and boils and God knows what else. And he went to his urologist, and he tried medicine and stuff to no avail, ointments, you name it. And then he went to another guy, more of a specialist in such things, and he couldn't do a thing to help the poor bastard. And finally he went to another, you know, Park Avenue specialist, and he ran all kinds of tests, did all sorts of tissue cultures and all kinds of stuff, and concluded, you know, there's no medical hope for you, young man. We're literally going to have to cut off your cock. And the guy couldn't dream of such a thing happening. So he finally wound up overseas in the office in a little village of a fellow who specialized in Asian medicine, Oriental medicine. And he said, oh, no, there's no need at all to cut that off. And the guy was so relieved, but the doctor said, wait, let me finish. In about another 3 days, it will fall off on its own. So.
Hey, I thought that was going to go somewhere entirely different. I thought it was going to be the joke that ends with, I'll bet you have some terrible headaches.
I don't know the build-up to that one, but I love the punchline.
Or else it's the one that ends with, well, yeah, but I don't think I can stand having another roll stuffed up my ass. There's that one, too.
I don't know that one either.
Well, I've ruined both of them now, and the people who know the jokes are actually laughing. So there's that.
I'm not your father. The bishop is your father. And I wish I knew the build-up to that, because that's a great punchline.
Let's see if the internet has the answer. I'm not your father. The bishop is your father. Punchline. It's going to take a while, yeah, but I'll bet it's, let's see, orphaned punchline, in the name of the father, rude jokes, the most funny Catholic jokes, those are the first four hits, and then Pope Francis appoints Father Robert Barron auxiliary bishop. So, at the risk of ruining any other dandies out there, I will forego. But I'm glad we've kind of, I don't know if I'm glad or sad that we've gotten past it. This has provided a hell of a lot of fun over the years. Has it been years? No, it hasn't been years.
No, I've only been listening a couple of years.
Meanwhile, under the subject line, Things Cohen, Steve on the Gulf Coast, a member of the Fraternity of Steve, says, I never cared so much for the Big Lebowski. If you like Bridges, for the most part, try True Grit 2010. Matt Damon, Josh Brolin, and Haley Steinfeld to boot. I've seen it. Almost surreal, and a truly eerie encounter with the Mountain Man makes it cinematically unique, in my humble opinion. Bonus, cowboys and other Wild West hard cases breaking into Elizabethan English during moments of dramatic tension. And that's, you know, all that wonderful language comes from the novel itself. And it appears as well in the 1968 version with John Wayne, mostly through the utterances of Kim Darby playing baby sister.
Okay,
the author wrote all that dialogue that way, and it's what makes it so special. But oddly enough, that Steve would mention True Grit, because the first thing that I thought when I read the Tom Cotton, the letter, the thing about a letter, letters from, coming from Tom Cotton's office, The first thing that popped into my mind was that Tom Cotton needs to hear from the lawyer J. Noble Daggett of Dardanelle in Yell County. Because, he's a recurring running gag throughout the entire original. I can't remember if he makes any kind of a showing in the 2010 True Grit.
But no, I didn't see the remake, but
in the original version, he drove them into bankruptcy. He drove them into receivership. They tried to mess with him. You'll get a letter from my lawyer, J. Noble Daggett of Dardanelle in Yell County. Which is all part and parcel of the mess that gets made of the geography in that film. I think I mentioned the other night that Agnes and I rewatched the John Wayne version, and the next thing you know, they're out hunting for the murderer Tom Chaney, and son of a bitch, if there aren't some peaks, they're about 10,000 feet high in the distance. There aren't any of those in Arkansas.
Oh hell no!
It starts out there at the family farm in the family farm near Dardanelle in Yell County, and there is a Dardanelle in Yell County, Arkansas, and it's Yell, and the story proceeds to Fort Smith, which sits on the Oklahoma border. But again, you've got to go an awful long damn way to find 10,000 foot high snow capped peaks and fucking aspen trees.
No, hell, well, there's some mountains in Arkansas, but nothing.
Yeah, they're the like Ozarks. The, they're like the Appalachians.
Yeah.
So, that is a fine one. A lot more grim than the John Wayne version, and I think truer to the book. The book is worth the read all by itself.
Yeah. Well, getting back to the Big Lebowski, and you wonder what we're going to talk about now, I love movies, okay? And two of my favorite movies are the Stanley Kramer classic, It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, which to me is in the top five. It will never be out of my personal top five. And another one is from a couple of years later, that not a lot of people know it, but it's a lovely, lovely little film called A Thousand Clowns. And it stars Jason Robards and Martin Balsam and the dark-haired fellow that was on Saint Elsewhere, Daniel, I think is his last name. William Daniels?
Jeff Daniels?
No, not Jeff. He's got a New England accent, and he's usually plays an officious type. Oh, I can't think of his name. William Daniels, I think, is his actual name. But A Thousand Clowns is a lovely little film. And it and Mad World are in my top five, and never could be moved out of there. And I look for the day now that I've seen it and will watch many, many times to get more out of it. I hope it can join those two films.
Oh, it gets funnier with the viewing. You know, now I've never seen the second one, but yeah, I agree with you on It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. And it's weird that once you become an aficionado of that, you always get the number of mads right. And the remake sucked, as remakes often do.
Yeah. Well, there's no way to top the original simply because stars of that caliber, especially comedic actors, we don't have enough of them, and those that we have more than likely are not anywhere near the caliber of the original cast of Mad World.
Right, right. And what was kind of interesting is last night as we watched American Made, I looked at Agnes and I said, this is like a more serious, semi-historical version of the madness that is the In-Laws. Because I remain what is probably the world's biggest fan of the In-Laws, 1979, Peter Falk, Alan Arkin, Nancy Dussault.
Yeah, I have got to see that again because I know I've seen it on TV at some point or another, but it was so long ago. Most of what I saw is just out of my, it's gone. Like if I don't tap into
sadly these tsetse flies are protected from pilferage by the Guacamole Act of 1917.
Before there was Lebowski, there was the In-Laws. And if I was to read an interview and find that the Coen brothers are huge In-Laws fans, I'd go, well, of course.
Well, the mark of a true fan of any film is the dynamic is very similar to the mark of any true fan of the Fire Sign Theater. And that is when you use a line just taken from random from a Fire Sign Theater record, if there's another fan in the room,
they will answer like call and response in church.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
See, the same thing just happened with Robert in Australia, who wrote me a couple of minutes ago to say, it was a hole in the ground, but it was a ouse to us.
Yeah.
And I followed with, oh, what I would have given for a hole in the ground. It just happens. That's like the one thing that most people know about the In-Laws is that one line, serpentine, Sheldon, serpentine.
Yeah.
And so there I was a couple of years ago watching an HBO series called Generation Kill, which was written by a Rolling Stone reporter about his time embedded with a Marine platoon or group or company or whatever. I don't know that shit. At one point, they're in some town, maybe it's Baghdad, and they're shooting, and the reporter goes to run, and he starts running in S curves till he gets to where he's going, and the Marine looks at him and says, "What the fuck were you doing?" And he goes, "Serpentine." And it was such a delightful little inside joke moment that. And he looks at the young Marine, played by, Alexander Skarsgård, and says, "Have you never seen the In-Laws?" The guy just, huh? And, you can tell when things are, you can tell when things have a sort of a cultural impact, when little Easter eggs like that pop up in something as diverse as a movie about the invasion of Iraq. Miniseries about the invasion of Iraq. By the way, Brian just wrote in to say William Daniels played Dr. Mark Craig. Albert in Rhode Island says, J. Noble Daggett did show up at the end of the movie. He gave Rooster Cogburn a reward for saving Kim Darby's life. I know that. But he's a running reference throughout most of it. The one point where I forget if it's John Wayne looks at Glenn Campbell or Glenn Campbell looks at John Wayne and says, "She draws that lawyer Daggett like a gun." It's just one of those moments.
Is that on Netflix or Amazon? Because it's been a while since I've seen True Grit.
I think I watched it on like Stars or something. Maybe it's on Amazon. Oh.
All right, listen, I'm going to let you go, but before I go, since I brought up the Fire Sign Theater, and I've meant to mention this to you a few times, one of my pals on Facebook is Phil Proctor, who is one of the last two surviving members of Fire Sign Theater, and his long-awaited book came out a couple of months ago, Where's My Fortune Cookie? And I know you don't have guests on a lot, but if you want a fascinating guest, let me know and I'll hook you up with him because he and Bergman, one of the other members who passed on a few years ago, were caught up in a Chinese restaurant in San Francisco in the 70s, I want to say. And they got in the crossfire of a gang skirmish, with gunplay and people dead and everything. And that's where the title of the book comes from, Where's My Fortune Cookie? Because obviously after all that shit came down, they didn't stick around for a meal because A, they weren't interested in eating, and B, the kitchen was suddenly closed. But he's a fascinating human being. And I mean, anybody who is into the Fire Sign Theater knows the intelligence of those four guys. And like I say, it may be too entertainment oriented. But they were, I'll send you a copy of a article that was online not long ago about the impact that they had on American culture in the late 60s and into the 70s. They were top Columbia Records artists for several years. I mean, all of it wasn't a wide appreciation, but it was a very devoted appreciation. So, you know, I'll send you that article, and if you're interested in having him on sometime, I'll tell you how to reach him. But even their album titles, one of my favorites is I Think We're All Bozos on This Bus, is one of the best. And another one is All Hail Marx and Lenin, but it's Groucho Marx and John Lennon.
And John Lennon, right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Waiting for the electrician or somebody like him.
Apparently one of Isaac's, Isaac in Columbus, apparently one of his favorite lines from It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. It comes from Terry Thomas, you know, J. Algernon Hawthorne.
Yeah.
And he asked, can you do this in his voice? So I'll take a run at it.
Why Americans are so obsessed with breasts. I say if American women stopped wearing brassieres, your entire economy would collapse overnight.
So that's probably not close, but at least it was the old college try.
It was closer than you think.
Meanwhile, Ron in Raleigh says, my favorite True Grit line. Bruce Dern says, that's mighty bold talk for a one-eyed fat man.
Well, and if Trump loses one eye, we can use that one on him. That crazy son of a bitch. If he's 239 pounds, an inch shorter than I am, I'll go down on him at 12th and Pennsylvania and give you an hour and a half to clear traffic and draw a crowd.
Well, Isaac approved of my Terry Thomas, so you know my work here is done.
Yeah. Actually, there was one entertainment figure, I think it was entertainment figure, who offered Trump $100,000 for him to publicly step on a scale.
Yeah, I saw that. a calibrated scale of neutral, right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I stepped on the scale today. I deal with the reality. I put the, you know, after I quit the yogurt and air diet and once weed eating season was over with and I sat my fat ass back at down in this chair, boom, gravity, boom, some of the weight came back. But I mean, I know who, and so I guess, you know, I'm medically obese. But the doc didn't give me any shit today, so, you know, he just said, look, and we talked a little bit about my desire to, you know, yes, I've got to exercise, yes, I've got to quit smoking, I've come to that conclusion, I'm going to figure out how. It's probably not going to be pleasant. I hope I don't, but I may run the entire Horn Family Community Congregation away just by being mean to people in the midst of fucking nicotine fits on this program. Because the vast majority of my smoking takes place during this program. But one of the things that I've thought about, I got to quit smoking if we're going to go to video. I got to.
Yeah,
because the amount of hate mail I'll get if we ever grow the audience. I can't believe it. You're smoking in front of the children. What are the children going? Really? You've got your kids. You got your kids watching this? Really? What, you got them chained to tables in a house in California?
Well, if I can give you a word of encouragement, and I empathize with you with smoking, because from age 18, well, let's just put it this way, from 1972 until August of 1999, I was a solid two-pack-a-day smoker, sometimes up bordering up toward three. I was a junkie, okay? And I had quit one time for 4 months and one time for 10 months, but then fell off the wagon. I know what it is to quit those things. I'll give you all the support you could possibly want or need, because I know how tough it is. I mean, but you definitely should definitely look at quitting. And usually, if you can make it past the first week or two without killing someone, you're usually going to make it.
Well, and that's the thing. I gotta get that far down the road. Arthur knows. Well, good morning, Bob. Oh yeah, what's so fucking great about it, you bastard? You know, that's what nicotine fits are like. But we talked about it, and I said, okay. So I can't use the lozenges or the gum and the patch. And he said, well, they generally recommend against that. I said, Thorazine dart, and he smiled. And then we talked about the exercise thing, and I said, you know, I don't just want to be a guy on a treadmill. If that's what I got to do, that's what I got to do. But I don't want to be that. And I asked him, I said, you know, given the way my neck is and everything, martial arts, and I was hoping he'd tell me, well, you know, no, the, you know, there's this, you know, ancient secret. And he goes, it was just like talking to the Horn family. You could probably handle Tai Chi, and well, okay. I guess Tai Chi, but only if I get to make obscure and funny noises. You know, while I'm doing absolutely nothing.
Well, in my opinion, the Nicorette gum is closer to smoking. I mean, you use it in the same way that you use cigarettes. And by that, I don't mean you try to light it, okay? Because it won't stay lit.
No,
okay,
you chew it, you tuck it away.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I've been down that road. And gosh, what a good-tasting thing that Nicorette gum is, too.
It comes in flavors now.
Oh, I know.
I still chew it.
Bong-watered-flavored mint, bong-watered-flavored juicy fruit, bong-water-flavored cinnamon. Right, I get it.
Hey, I happen to like nicotine, okay? I mean, I used it to quit, and I was off it for years. And then I was going through a stressful time and wanted to smoke. And I said, no, you crazy bastard, don't do that. Go out and buy a box of Nicorette. And I won't say I'm hooked on the gum, but I like a little nicotine with my coffee in the morning. Okay? In that form,
you sure, you throw that word coffee around pretty loosely. We know what you fucking drink, Scott.
Yeah, that dark brown, nasty, instant water.
Is this freeze-dried? It's very good. Again, the in-laws.
But I'm telling you, Bob, it none of us would begrudge you chomping on the air if it's going to help you, you know, stay with us, you know, be upright and above ground a good while longer.
Well, I'm gonna get there. I mean, it's and everybody who's ever done this knows that you've got to get to that place in your head. Ron and Raleigh said, they said, I quit smoking as a New Year's resolution 44 years ago. I, like Scott, was a two pack a day guy. I told myself I was stronger than the habit. None of the aids were available when I quit. You're just tough, Ron. You're tough as damn nails. meanwhile, Arthur says, just don't use Chantix. Smoking is better. Seriously.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that stuff is a nightmare because it fucks with your brain chemistry.
Well, it's an SSRI, isn't it? It's Wellbutrin.
Yeah, I think it works on that same principle.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I'm gonna roll out of here, but it's been fun as it always is, Scott. And we've covered serious issues, and I think that people actually do enjoy a little respite here and there.
Yeah.
From the madness. Although I'm gonna close with this. Your reference and and Isaac's reference to "It's a Mad, 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 Mad World." The Ethel Merman characters, I've said that when Buddy Hackett looks at her and says, "May you just drop dead," she's awful. She's such a horrible human being in the film. But there's a line that she has, and while we were talking, I actually looked it up because I wanted to get it right. And you know, that voice of Ethel Merman and everything. But you could have this tattooed on your ass for the era of Trump and the American voter and the American body politic, Republicans generally, and some fucking Democrats. Yeah. I bet you know the line.
I think I do, yeah.
What kind of an attitude is that? These things happen. Yeah. The only reason why these things happen is because this whole country is filled with people that when these things happen, they just say, "These things happen, and that's why they happen."
Yeah. I knew that was the line that you were going to give.
God damn, I mean, why have there not been PhD dissertations written at the John F. Kennedy School of Public, what the fuck ever, at Harvard over that line?
Yeah.
And it's a 1963 film, for Christ's sakes, and that's freighted with all the gravitas of every political for-profit media show on air today.
And in a lot of ways, Bob, that film was a tonic for America and the world, timing-wise, just as the Beatles were. Because you got to remember, it opened not long after the assassination of President Kennedy.
And that's a weird little time, because you get "It's a Mad, 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 Mad World," and then just shortly thereafter, you get 7 Days in May.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cow.
Well, if anybody, you included, if anybody is in the market for buying it on Blu-ray, I can recommend the Criterion Collection, "It's a Mad, 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 Mad World." And one of the selling points, not that the film needs to be flogged at all, is three of the foremost authorities on the film do the audio track commentary. There are very few films that I will go out and buy, but I bought that because I love the film so much. I'm old enough to where I actually saw it in the theater.
Well, I just checked here. The actual limited release date was November 7th, 1963. And then I guess broader release immediately after the assassination.
That sounds about right. But, you know, America, if there was any point in time when America and the world needed the tonic that film brought us, it was right, you know, late 63 and into 64 when it went into the neighborhood theaters.
Well, okay, I'm going to have to go watch it again. But it's one of those comedies that's kind of stressful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It because you're just kind of cringing at the awfulness that's on display. anyway, I'm gonna roll on out of here. It's been a lovely conversation, and I do appreciate it. Thank
okay,
you, Scott.
And let me apologize in closing to all the people I made wait so damn long, from you on down or on up.
Oh,
I didn't.
Stuff it, Scott. It was a bit, and you know it, and I know it. Don't ruin the magic.
All right.
And Punky, and it was all Punky's fault anyway, because he's a ventriloquist and he's doing it all.
Yeah, and his beak hardly moves.
Exactly. Later, Scott.
All right. See ya.
It's our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. So now the great mystery is solved, and we're going to have to find somebody else to torment over movies. Or a movie. What's the next movie we torment over? I don't know. The whole smoking thing always gets always generates emails. Keith says, Bob, my doctor told me that it takes 72 hours for nicotine to clear the system. Then it takes 21 days to change a habit. A heart attack and two stents will also break the habit. Well, I can't afford the heart attack. So that's why I'm working on screwing my courage to the sticking place. And I know that makes me sound like a real pissant, but and there's that word again. But I'm getting there. Meanwhile, a note coming from Darlene in Connecticut. Subject line, Tai Chi. Bob, Tai Chi might be more might be tougher than you think. After all, slow muscles work harder. Oh, I know. I know. I had some experience with Tai Chi back in, well, back many, many years ago as part of, like, theatrical movement and that sort of thing where you learn how to walk around on a stage without looking like you've got a stick up your ass. Or like you do if that's what the role calls for. But you know what? This is my thing. I mean, I love Tai Chi. I think it's really, really cool. I want a martial art where I can kick somebody's ass if I need to. Yes, I'm a pacifist, but we all have our little fantasies and things like that. And yeah. Oh, that's pitiful on my part, isn't it? Yes, of course it is. Still, no, that's probably the route that I'm going to go because either Tai Chi, you know, and I'll figure out a way to work up a sweat doing it. Just because me. But I still insist on being able to make the inscrutable noises. Because, as we can tell, I'm a creature of film and television, and my mind associates making noises with. Shut up, Bob. Yeah. Marty, meanwhile, going back to coffee, says, "I prefer caffeine with my Café du Monde coffee. Leave out the nicotine." Well, that's the difference between being a junkie and not. So earlier in the program, I suggested maybe we look up the name of Carl Higbee. Did we? Because he's just made an exit from the Trump administration. And you know, look, these things are not accidents. These people didn't get into the Trump administration because they just accidentally had histories of being racists and xenophobes and bigots. Those were goddamn job requirements. And so CNN's K-File got hold of some audio from Carl Higbee, who is a hardcore member of the Maggots, a big-time Trumpansy. And he was part of the Corporation for National, he was Chief of External Affairs at the Corporation for National and Community Service. But back in 2013, he was the host of a radio program called The Sound, wait, I think we need reverb for this. The Sound of Freedom! Which it turns out was actually the sound of racism. Without further ado, let's just check in on the Sound of Freedom, because it sounds an awful... Well, you'll get the idea.
Really sad. And I believe that's why so many are coming back with PTSD.
Right.
I mean, does that make sense to you?
Well, I think PTSD is an interesting... It's kind of a broad spectrum. I mean, a lot of people... The problem with PTSD is a lot of people don't physically or mentally know how to cope with combat or tough situations. Now, I'd say 75% of the people with PTSD don't actually have it, and they're either milking something for a little extra money in disability, or they're just—they honestly are just lying. 25% legitimately do have problems. They have bad dreams. They can't cope. They have problems with noises and things like that. And I really think there are people that cannot deal with the stress of combat, and some people can't.
Well, don't you guys
So your average PTSD sufferer is just a malingering layabout who couldn't handle having to be awash in gore and guts and slaughter, and that's, you know, just that's a failing, right? But it's not just people who have PTSD that Carl Higbee, hardcore Trump supporter, didn't like. Oh, no, not by a long shot. Come on. You know. I mean, this guy probably has Confederate flag fucking pajamas, all right?
You're a firsthand example of this. I own a company called Rustic Timber Company, and we sell, you know, decor. I mean, check us out, www.rustictimbercompany.com. We sell decor. And
I really got to up our game here. I mean, all we've got is a bullshit nutritional supplement company that isn't even real. This guy was hawking a timber company? Nice. Maybe he kept it in a General Steel building. Who knows?
We have a sawmill, and we build furniture and cutting boards and everything you can do. Rich and Marla actually have one of my cutting boards, and so far, so good. They love it. But one of the things we did was we would put firewood outside. And after the wood comes off the sawmill, it goes into a pot. The stuff we use is obviously put in the kiln and it's dried. And the stuff we don't use, the scrap, the outside edges, we scrap into firewood. And we have an ad on Craigslist, free firewood. So in that day that we had put that large pile out there, I had about 50 people come by. And I would say that it was about half and half, half black, half white people. This is in Virginia Beach, mind you. So of the 25 or so white people that came by, not a single one asked me to help load the firewood in their car, to do anything for them, to split it for them, or anything. So I was very happy, and a lot of them even offered, you know, $5. Hey, let me buy you a case of beer, let me buy you lunch, something. Now, on the other hand, out of the 25 or so black people,
here it comes.
Only one person was actually cordial to me. Every other black person was rude. They wanted me to either load the wood, completely split it for them, or some sort of, you know, assistance in labor. Now, mind you, the ad was for free firewood. Come take it all you want. And I believe that this translates directly into the culture that is breeding this welfare and the high percentage of people on welfare in the black race. It's
no mention of the high percentage of welfare in the white race, but yeah, well, because it goes on for minutes more, but we're running out of time, and I want to share a couple more of the goodies. He doesn't like Muslims.
So, Sharia law schools that don't teach math, they don't teach English, they don't teach anything but Sharia law from the age of 8 to 13.
You know what? They had a big thing on Tuesday night down in Tennessee.
That's not me. That's the recording.
Tennessee. And Bing, Uncle Bing, our guy from Soldiers of Patriotism, he was on, and he had said that somebody there said that they didn't want to abide by our constitutional laws. Well, you know what? If you don't want to abide by our constitutional laws, get the hell out of America.
Yeah. Because go back to your Muslim shithole and go crap in your hand and bang little boys.
Wait, you're Muslim what? You're Muslim what? I wonder where Donald Trump got that word. Because that's not from 3 weeks ago. So let's back up just for fun.
Get the hell out of America.
Yeah. Because go back to your Muslim shithole and go crap in your hand and bang little boys on Thursday nights. I just don't like Muslim people. And people always rip me a new one for that. They're like, Carl, you're racist. You can't. You're sexist. You're fat. I'm like, Jesus Christ. I just don't like Muslim people because their ideology sucks.
Hey.
And
but some of them come over here.
there's a bunch more just like that. Now, this guy has quietly gone about the business of being a toxic little mole inside the government of we the people, trying to be a make a more perfect union. Okay, here's the question. So did they know about this and said, what the fuck, give him the job anyway? Or did they just not bother to vet him at all? He's a right-wing hate monger. Did anybody listen to the archives? Just a question. And it all sort of dovetails with something that Senator Richard Blumenthal is talking about. FEMA has done an about-face. There's a thing called the Transitional Shelter Assistance Program, and it provides aid for people who have been rendered homeless by virtue of natural disaster. 45 displaced Puerto Rican families are living in Connecticut as a result of the Transitional Shelter Assistance Program. And without so much as a kiss my ass, the Trump administration, FEMA, has suddenly pulled that housing support for 45 families in Connecticut. They weren't even given a whole day's notice. Guess where else Donald Trump thinks is a shithole? Who knows? We may pick up with this tomorrow on Friday on the Front Porch. The other thing we'll have to deal with tomorrow on Friday on the Front Porch is a $430 fundraising goal. Thank you very kindly to our buddy John. Thank you, John, so much for keeping it from being a $630 fundraising goal. Here we go, then. Thanks to everybody who shares in the precious finite time of your one life on this planet to engage in this little conversation. Thank you so much. Thank you to all of you who helped keep the program on the air. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room, and thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.